Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's that time of the day again. Time for the Elephant in the Room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is the host of the Elephant in the Room, Sam DeMarco, here joined in studio as usual with my trusty executive director, John Schneider, the Robin to my Batman.
Thanks.
And then you have over here our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy, the host of the D&G Morning Show, here today to make sure that our words reach you, our listeners, because we have a great show for you today. We're joined in studio by my friend, and he's been a guest here on the show before, but we're joined by Keith Schmidt, principal of Bridge Connections. Now, Keith is a consultant who's consulted with dozens of political races since the early 1980s, including on both presidential, gubernatorial, senatorial, congressional, legislative, and judicial campaigns. Now, his primary focus has been in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and Keith has always shown political clients or chosen political clients based upon their professional resume and not their party registration. So he brings insight from both sides of the aisle. As a result, he has woven unique relationships with both Democrats and Republicans over the past 30 plus years. And Keith, we want to welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Sam. It's always great to be here with your listeners. And we tend to have a pretty high charge show when I'm here, you know, and we scratch our heads and the ire, we always say, where's the ire gone? So I'm hoping that happens again this hour.
Well, you always bring the heat, Keith. We're short of, okay? And my gosh, there's so many things that we could talk about. I mean, a couple weeks ago, you know, President Trump was convicted in a Manhattan court. You know, 34 counts of, here I am. I still don't know what the crime was, okay? But so on the heels of that, you know, I can tell you that recent polls show, at least in Pennsylvania, that's not going to make any difference. But then just this past week, you have Hunter Biden was convicted in a court, you know, of lying on a gun application here, federal charge. And, you know, we've yet to see what's going to happen with him. But while this is going on there, you also have so many other things in the news, right? We had the EU elections, the European Union. And Keith, you and I were talking just before we got started about how in many cases, going back almost 40 years, the results of those elections sort of presage ours. And you want to share with our listeners a little bit about what you were saying?
Yeah, there's I couldn't look it up in time, but I know that I've read major newspapers across the country through the years, especially starting, I would say, during sort of the Reagan Revolution era, when Reagan's relationship with Europe changed and the Europeans started to pay a lot closer attention to what was going on in America, because there was a more of an accountability with Ronald Reagan, with the folks in their friends in Western Europe. And there's definitely it's like a tarot. If you want to read tarot cards, you know, they jokingly said, I saw an article maybe two or three years ago about the last 40 years since Reagan was inaugurated in 1981, all the way back to 2021. They were talking about the 40 years and how in almost every case, the elections in the European Union foreshadowed American elections. And obviously sometimes that worked, much to the chagrin of Republicans like ourselves. But as we saw the news hit the wire, the proverbial wire in recent days, it was shockwaves. I mean, they knew that there would be gains by the right and the more conservative coalitions. But the gains really even caught most of these governments by surprise. I actually think no one expected the president of France to call for elections, and he actually called for elections the night of the election, the night of the results. And it literally sent tremors that absolutely reached America, and the Democrats have to be really digesting those results and wondering, are they going to have to make some adjustment between now and Election Day to be competitive with the type of politics and government that we're selling right now, which is, if you're looking for change, if you're frustrated, whether the you know, we've nominated now the same man for the third time come next month. But in the end, Donald Trump is the change. I mean, if you want change, you have to elect the former president. We're down to two choices. You have to do what you have and what we once had. And in most polls are bearing out, you know, poll after poll saying, I liked it better. The security of the nation felt a little better under Trump. My pocketbook felt a little better under Trump. Our position in the world was a little better under Trump. We weren't at war under Trump. Time and time again, they're hearkening back to a time when things were a lot better than they are right now. So if you're looking for change, and every poll says they want change, the change is the former president.
Well, I would only differ with you in that you used the word little, and I would say things were a lot better.
A lot better.
Under Trump.
Okay? I stand correct.
Yes, we had mean tweets. You know, and yes, we had a little bit of a, which some folks in the media would characterize as chaos. But today, when I look across the globe here and you look at what's occurring, war in the Middle East, war in Ukraine, China rattling its saber in the South China Sea, Yemen launching missiles at our ships.
10 million people crossing the southern border.
Exactly. And I think that's the tie-in, Keith, between the elections, recent elections in Europe and what is happening here. You know, the media is trying to present that as like a populist or nationalist uprising, you know, over in Europe, okay? But their key issue, one of the things that change, that election revolved around or moved upon, was the fact that they've had that mass immigration, you know, coming in Europe, which is changing the culture of some of these countries, and you have people now pushing back. While immigration is so important to them, it's also one of the number one issues. If it's not number one here, it's number two, you know, right after inflation. And you have people that are concerned about the 10 million people that have crossed this border, at least, you know, under Biden in the last 4 years. And can you imagine if he were to be reelected, what we would face in the next four?
Yeah, I'm concerned that average Americans are somewhat immune now to just how large these stories are in and of themselves. I mean, when I look at what you just rattled off, any one of those issues, hotbeds, either here at home or around the world, could define a presidential administration. That would be enough that you would write books about how the president dealt with that particular conflict. We're immune to the fact that now they're literally on top of each other. If the only thing that this president grappled with and failed us on was the 10 million people crossing the border, that would be enough to say we have to move on. If the only thing he had to deal with is the disastrous situation now in the Middle East, which absolutely has a direct effect on the people in the West and the American people and our economy and our national security and the weapons exchange and on and on and on. You know, it's dividing people on Main Street. It's dividing us in universities. We need a laser focus on understanding this situation and having a competent foreign policy. That doesn't seem to exist there. And that alone, like I said, if that was the only issue, that would be an enormous issue of failure for this president. And that's just another issue. Ukraine, whether you like it or not, one of the largest arsenals in the world of nuclear weapons is Russia. Russia isn't what it used to be. They only has 140 million people, and they're struggling even in 2024 to feed their own people, and their economy is failing. But they still hold a nuclear arsenal. And their provocative moves to try to annex Ukraine is a big deal to us, and it's been disastrous. And that alone, again, could define an administration. That could be enough that we did a poor job dealing with the Russian invasion, dealing with the politics and the international negotiations. And for that reason, you have the president stand down because he's in charge of foreign policy. And then you said the provocative situation is you go to China. We all in most cases, it's what's not going on might be the biggest issue, because you fight enough fronts, you become vulnerable. And China, let me tell you, they're looking for the right timing to go after Taiwan. And let me tell you, if you look at an international issue that can affect in America, the quickest they can affect us is making the Republic of Taiwan destabilized. If you destabilize our relationship with Taiwan and our dependency on them for technology, that could be the largest threat to our national security in our lifetime. And we don't even talk about that, because it's really, we're just saying that could go on. So it's just one on top of another on top of another. And I don't know one success. I don't know one ribbon I'd put, you know, on in his hat to say, well, with all that going on, at least the president did X. There is no X. the X, move the X down one column and put the X in the box for Donald Trump this fall, because we need change.
Well, and you know, you brought that up. I think one of the things that's going to be so difficult for people, and folks, we're here talking in studio with Keith Schmidt, principal of Bridge Connection, Republican consultant, and we're talking about some of the things that are taking place here. And right now we're talking about the elections that are upcoming in November. But Keith, if you look at things, right, we have gas prices up 50% over what they were the day Biden was inaugurated. We have inflation has increased by over 20% since Biden was inaugurated. Wages have not kept up. They've only increased by 16%. Okay. You have mortgage rates have more than doubled, making, you know, home buying even unaffordable for the middle class, you know, right now. We have, as we talked about, the 10 million immigrants that have come across the border, okay, and all these other things. There are just so many things that are happening right now, okay, that it's easy for many folks to just become overwhelmed and not pay attention. But I think this is one of the reasons why you see over 70% of the public believes that this country is headed in the wrong direction.
Sure.
You know, and when we talk about, you know, Joe Biden as a president, one of the things that has nagged me is, you know, conservatives and Republicans, they rejoice when they see even papers like the New York Times print an article critical of Joe Biden. You know, the Wall Street Journal comes out and questions or points out that, you know, some of his inner circle, some of the folks working in the White House are questioning whether he's lost his fastball. And we all know, you know, this guy has, right? But we rejoice upon this. But I think, you know, we could be walking into a trap, because I don't know that this guy is actually going to be the Democrat nominee for president.
Well, I have, you know, I try to speak out on every medium possible, both periodicals, newspapers, radio shows like yours, television here locally and around this region of the country. And I've been a broken record for probably the better part of a year and a half, maybe closer to two, that I thought when push comes to shove, that the Democratic Party will not be able to renominate this president. And in some ways, I think my argument gets stronger and stronger as we get closer to that final decision that has to be made at their August convention, because all the things that I think play into this decision are getting worse for this team of President Biden and Kamala Harris. You know, every poll indicates that the path for the former president is with them running the current team in the White House. And the fact that they're realizing, polling indicates, although there's a concern about Kamala Harris, a lot of people haven't put two and two together and got four yet. And they know that the Republicans are going to put that in front of the American people and explain to them, not that the president, even if the president just becomes incapacitated, his health fails to the point where he has to stand down. I'm not saying the president has to pass away. If he just says he's no longer physically fit to serve, and we see, you know, what's happening both mentally and physically, you know, right before our eyes, we've witnessed it for now 3.5 years. And we know that no one believes that this man in his early 80s, under the pressure that he's under, can sustain this job for another 4 years. So we're going to remind the American people, when you go to the ballot box, you're essentially electing two presidents. You're going to be electing Joe Biden, but you're also going to be electing President Kamala Harris, a woman who only gets a third of the support among her own party. So that number is much more dismal among Republicans. And there is every indication that I think this is a change election. And the best chance, and I hate to give advice on the air, but the best chance the Democrats have for maintaining the White House is to change. I think if they stick to Biden and Harris in August, I think there is a path forward for the former president to be elected again and do the Grover Cleveland, miss a term, come back, retake the White House. That's an absolute logical path that I think that he can achieve. But if they change, I think the polling number's up in the air. A short election where we don't know who this person would be. For the last 12 months or a year and a half, I've been saying that I believe that Michelle Obama, because she's telling us there's no chance she would say that Michelle Obama is the most likely replacement at the top of the ticket. And when you only have a six-week time to define her, similar to like a British election for parliament, it's a lot tougher to define a person in a short period of time. And that's why I think they're taking us off the scent a bit by scheduling the earliest presidential debate in American history, later this month. And I said, you know what? They're doing that not because they're committed to the president. They're doing that to make us more and more comfortable with the fact that they're not going to switch. But I would not be surprised at all. In fact, I still think it's 50-50. I think there's meetings among the highest level of the Democratic Party talking about, can we switch up at the August convention? Let me tell you, you can. All the people that think, oh, you can't, the primary's over. No, don't confuse government and parties. Parties have the power to do whatever they want to do at their convention. The last day, they could put in two new names and by acclamation support a new presidential ticket. There's nothing in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or anything that has to do with parties. Parties control themselves. So, and I said it would be off air. You were telling me some other things that make you believe that this might be in the works.
Well, yeah, and folks, Keith and I haven't just gone off our rockers, although it may sound like that, okay? But really, there's a concern about this. Sure. I mean, and a couple things. Why is Josh Shapiro running commercials across PA right now talking about all the good things, and I put good things in air quotes, okay, that he claims to have accomplished, right? I mean, this guy's not up for election until 2026. But he's also a popular governor in a critical swing state, which would be Pennsylvania. You know, and certainly if he were to take and become the Democratic nominee, I believe that the polls in Pennsylvania would lead or would show in his favor against the former president.
Or Obama, okay. Or Obama and Shapiro. That would be a formidable ticket.
No, absolutely. But so there's all kinds of names we could throw at it. But I think the point being, we have the earliest presidential debate in history, and the Democrats are having a late Democrat convention. In addition to that, folks, it's not like in the past. I mean, and we can go back. Keith was talking about history. You go back to 1968. You know, Hubert Humphrey Lyndon Baines Johnson was presumed to be the Democrat nominee for president, but he withdrew. So it's not a matter of someone, you know, holding a coup, so to speak, at the Democrat National Convention. It's just a matter of folks convincing Joe Biden that he can't win. You know, or to withdraw on health reasons, and he could pull out, and then they would take and pick someone else. And again, this is after the primary. You can bet top Democrats would get together and come up with names to nominate to folks that they believe would give them the best chance to hold on to power. You know, here is because they don't want to give it up.
Well, those who want to see change in the White House and want to see, you know, a pathway for the former president to return and some of his policies to return, you know, you got to put a lot of weight to this debate that's coming up in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. If he can hold it together, if he could show in a very stark way the differences between him and the current president, and you take the teleprompter, you could rest him all you want. I mean, when you rest him, he absolutely rises to the occasion. But unfortunately, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 or 5 days rest is a hard thing to even understand and comprehend that the leader of the free world, you could rest for that many days.
Right.
But they did. They did before the State of the Union, and to their credit, he pulled it off. But he pulled it off by being very rested and having a teleprompter. He's not going to have that luxury in this debate. And we may see the signs of aging in a very stark way. But unfortunately, it will help us if he remains the nominee of the Democratic Party. But if he has a really terrible performance, it actually could open the door for them to seriously thinking about replacing him as well.
Absolutely.
Which could be problematic for us.
Absolutely. And the other part of this that folks need to understand is things have changed from 1968. In 1968, when they did that at the convention, and then they went forward to November and they lost, Richard Nixon won, you know, in a landslide there. But what's changed is the advent of early voting and voting by mail. So here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you will be able to cast a ballot as early as September 15th. So should this happen, should they take and pull Joe Biden and plug another nominee in there, you'd have less than a month or just over a month, a little over a month.
To be able to define that
nominee. To be able to define that nominee, to be able to do the opposition research, to be able to get all of that out there, okay, before votes started to be getting cast. So it would make it very, very difficult. And again, let me tell you, folks, you know, I am a solid Republican. I have been since the time I turned 18 and registered to vote. But I, you know, I will tell you that one of the things I've learned is that the Democrats and the left do not like giving up power, you know, and to them, the end justifies the means. And I put nothing past them, Keith. And, you know, so while we're talking about this, some folks may say, you know, what are Sam and Keith drinking? Okay. Well, I have water. You have Gatorade Zero there. Okay. But, and I can assure you, folks, it's not spiked, but there is, we do have a significant concern about what's going to happen here because, man, these things just seem to be lining up, you know, for something like that to occur. When you have all these entities on the left who've defended Biden for the last 3.5 years, all of a sudden seeming to recognize his frailties, failings, and shortcomings, you know, something's going on here. And,
yeah, we need.
Just
we
don't
need,
know what
we and it's becoming increasingly evident. The American people are starting to show it in the polls. They understand we need a full time chief executive. We need somebody laser foot. We don't need somebody at the end of their life. We don't need somebody that's frail and has cognitive problems and whatnot. And you question really who's in charge because it's not just about. You know, we spent 10 minutes of the program in the beginning going through all the things that we read about in newspapers and periodicals and the media every day being bombarded, what's happening around the world and what's happening at our southern border and whatnot. But let's talk about the things that were complicated and under this administration these last 3.5 years that are absolutely been percolating and are going to boil over, I can tell you, within a year. So if you reelect this president, it's going to be you're going to reelect somebody who has failed us on a number of domestic policies. Not only did you let 10 million people cross the border illegally, there's a margin call there, Sam. What are we going to do? How are we going to pay for these 10 million people now that have crossed the border that are going to need social services and jobs and housing and all this other stuff? That comes at a big ticket price. The defund police movement under Obama has been an abject failure. The safety of American cities are at their all-time low. The murder rate is at the all-time high. People are leaving the cities tens of thousands of people are escaping American cities. And economically, they're left with deficit spending. Almost every major city in America now has deficit spending, has a homelessness crisis, has a law and order crime crisis. They're staring down the biggest commercial real estate collapse in American history. That's going to happen within the next year. We can't stop it. The COVID renegotiation is over. Now people are even giving up. They cut their space by half. Now they're going to say, well, I don't want any space, or I'm moving to the suburbs, or I'm done in the city. My friends in Washington and New York in the finance markets are telling me, Keith, you heard of these $1 trillion numbers. You always said when you were in government, nothing was $1 trillion. During COVID, there were trillions spent. Now that trillion is going to, they're going to dwarf what was spent under COVID to bail out the cities because of what this administration has done to the American cities. And that price tag is going to be the historic price tag for the American taxpayer. It's going to be the largest bailout ever in the history of America. So when you look at the commercial real estate market ready to collapse, the law and order problem, the economic situations in the city, the homelessness, these are all domestic crises that we need a steady hand in the next 4 years, you know, and for even the sense that we're still debating on whether we should reelect this president, it's folly to us. I mean, I hope they stick to their guns because that's the opportunity for us to celebrate a victory in November. But they have to start realizing that it would be disastrous if this president was reelected another 4 years.
Well, I think they realize that, Keith, and that's why you see them continue to come out attacking the former president and making these outrageous and outlandish claims about what would happen if he was reelected. You know,
sure.
Talking about the end of democracy. I mean, my gosh, this guy was president for 4 years, okay? You know, democracy didn't end, so we know that this isn't true, right?
Sure.
But they make these outrageous claims about things that they claim will happen. You know, AOC claiming that she'll be locked up. You know, talk show hosts on MSNBC claiming that they'll be, you know, ejected from the country. All these insane, you know, accusations and claims. I mean, they will stop at nothing to retain power, and it's important that our listeners know that there should be nothing that keeps them away from the polls this November. And, you know, I'm a big believer, you know, in voting and insisting that they do. I would say, you know, I would like you to vote early, you know, vote by mail, absentee ballot. You know, just go down to your county elections office, fill out the ballot application or fill out the ballot application, get your ballot and fill it out and submit it there. Okay. Because too many things can get in the way here. This November, we talk about weather, we talk about work, we talk about kids, we talk about illness. Too many things can get in the way. This election is too important. It is the most important election of our lifetime. And we are going to have to take and make sure that we show up to ensure that we make the margin here, as former President Trump says, too big to rig. Folks, we're going to be right back with Keach Schmidt from Bridge Connections, right after the break. And we'll have to pay the bills. This is Sam DeMarco on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Welcome back, folks, to the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Keith, we were just speaking to you earlier and right before the break. You know, I was talking about why this election is so critical and why it's important that any of our listeners get out to vote. And I was urging them to do so early.
Yeah, and we talked a number of times. Republicans are people that do vote on election day. And we all say, hey, you know, the absent, our people like to show up. And I don't disagree with this. But I urged your committee, which is growing in numbers each and every year that you've led this party in Allegheny County. And quite frankly, Republican committees are growing across Pennsylvania and across the nation. It's been one of the largest surges in registration and switching registration, new registrations to Republicans in American history during the Biden administration. But I always said, I urge you folks to look at absentee ballots as a way to get out the non-traditional voters. And I always say, because technology exists, if you go to your local committee man or committee woman or to a county chair or anybody that handles voting in your community, whether anywhere within the sound of my voice, they can print out, because the data exists, of people that have voted in one of four of the last elections, or two of four. Actually, two of four is a lower voter when you think of presidential elections. If they're only voting half the time in presidential, they're a low propensity voter. And instead of knocking on the doors of the people that are going to come out anyhow, if you could find those, you know, in Findlay Township, and that you find out there's 200 low propensity voters, take the time to go knock on their doors and make it easier for them to vote. Those are the things that we should be doing as Republicans, because Republicans do come out on election day. We are much better at showing up in November, but it's important for these close elections, and some of these states are literally, we're winning on the margins. If we can get the low propensity people out to vote for our Republican nominee for president, that could be an important to the outcome of this close election. And that kind of pivots to what I wanted to do the last half of the program was, you know, what keeps me up at night, you know, and this dovetails to our last conversation when I was on the air with you a month or two ago. And I said, you know, of all the concerns we have, and I feel like, I hope we don't look like we're the sky is falling, because we spent a half hour talking about all the things that we need to be concerned about. And all that we're doing is preaching the fact that we need leadership, and we need a new direction, and we need somebody that cares about America and will take these important critical issues on head on. But again, another issue that if I had to rank the things that keep me up at night, it's just the integrity of the vote. That's my biggest concern. I'm a guy that I'm a student of history, and I've studied democracies dating back to the Greeks and the Romans. And every great democratic society, every great civilization lasted around 250 years, and then they started to implode. Well, we're marking our 250th in a few years. Mm-hmm. So we're ever so close to that time when you really have to take a long look at the democracy and how it works, and are we doing everything we can to protect it? And now we're staring down an election for all intents and purposes is going to be razor close. It will probably not be decided on election day. There'll probably be animus on both sides all the way to January 20th. And the question now is, because we've gone through the 16th cycle and the 20th cycle, and now this will be the third presidential election in a row when the American people on both sides of the aisle are not going to have a confidence in the outcome of this election. And I know they're all preaching, oh, the former president's already saying that he's going to fight like hell. If he doesn't win this election, he's going to fight like hell. Well, let me tell you, if the former president finds his way to the Electoral College, it might not be a run from the White House and the Oval Office that made us a little uncomfortable 4 years ago, but Democrats in the big city America, they're going to think it's their patriotic duty to stop this from happening. Well, they're going to justify it.
They tried to stop it in 2016, if you recall.
Oh,
after
sure.
Donald Trump won, they were calling, harassing, haranguing the electors, wanting them to vote for Hillary Clinton, okay, claiming that, again, the democracy was on the ballot.
And I could talk about this for hours on the whole. I really do think we have to federalize elections for president, vice president, senator, and Congress. I think the way you vote in Louisiana needs to be the same vote the way you vote in Maine, the same vote way you vote in Alaska. And it doesn't matter what county you're in or anything else. You can control the county elections. You can control the state elections. But the federal elections, there has to be an integrity of the vote, and that doesn't exist. And I think there'll be a huge movement for that after this election if we don't have a clear winner once again this year. But the fraud side of it, and I want to be careful here because I think there are bad people on both sides, and I'm sure there are people that try to you know, stuff the ballot box or do things that they shouldn't do. We know it exists. We do our best at every level to stop fraud. But the reason why we know that it's more prevalent among our compadres on the opposing party is fraud is easier to do when it's a volume proposition. You can't commit fraud in Potter County. There's only so many votes in Potter County, Pennsylvania, that have 5,000 people. You'd have to have the most intricate network of fraud ever, because you'd be able to take 10 votes from this county, 100 from this, 10 from this one. But when you have cities in America that are voting millions of people, Sam, and to throw in 10,000 extra votes or 5,000 extra votes, or in some cases as many as 40 or 50,000 extra votes, you can do it when you're literally accounting for millions and millions of ballots in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in New York, in Chicago. You know, that's the problem for us, is because the big cities have a way that we can't completely and confidently monitor the ballots on election night.
Okay, well, a couple things here. I have a lot to unpack there. First thing, you know, I would go back to, I've been beating the drum that Republicans need to embrace early voting and mail-in ballots since 2020.
You have been, actually.
Okay. I mean, I've been out there, I've been talking about it, leading on the issue, doing everything I possibly can. Now Republicans are finally catching up. You know, Laura Trump, who's the co-chair of the Republican National Committee, you know, has come out and she said that we know that traditionally Republicans, and this is a quote, we know that traditionally Republicans like to vote on Election Day. What we are asking this election cycle is for people to vote early, adding that Republicans should do so and then use their time from that day up until Election Day to talk to others, because we cannot leave this to chance. Okay? She's right there, right?
Sure.
But I want to disagree with you on the federalizing of the elections, and that's because Democrats in the last Congress proposed a bill, H.R. 1, was their most important bill. They wanted to federalize the election. But what they were looking to do was they were looking to get rid of all voter ID laws that were across this country. They wanted to take and make ballot harvesting legal. They wanted to take and make the use of federal funds for campaigns, use taxpayer dollars to campaigns. It was like an incumbent election plan, okay? And so I understand, you know, looking for consistency and how that would appear to be good, but I also believe that by having these disparate systems where the states run their own elections, it makes it harder to coordinate, you know, some sort of cheating or some sort of fraud from an organizational perspective. And you know, and I can tell you here, I push back on the fraud accusations, not because I don't believe that it occurs to some extent, but I don't want our folks to take and feel that their vote doesn't count. I don't want people to not go and vote thinking, no matter what I do, they're going to cheat. I'm on the Board of Elections here. And, you know, contrary to my critics, I am certainly not a dumb guy. All right? I spent a week at the warehouse back in 2020, and I've been doing this ever since. I have not seen any evidence of systemic fraud in Allegheny County. Now, do I believe that perhaps in senior care facilities or nursing homes that someone may be helping, and I'm using air quotes here, some seniors complete their ballots and submit them? Very possible. You know, I know we saw in 2020, we actually took and prosecuted a couple folks in Allegheny County. Unfortunately, they were Republicans. You know, one was voting, you know, for his wife who had passed away a number of years prior. So it does happen, you know, on both sides. Democrats who claim that voter fraud doesn't happen, my gosh, just in Connecticut this past week, there were a number of indictments of Democrats that were arrested for this. So stuff does, okay? And if you're not looking for it, you're not going to find it, which is why folks say, well, there's not that many cases of it. But again,
But the current system of absentee ballots, I get you go to a warehouse and you see all the absentee ballots and you're not seeing fraud at the warehouse. The problem that the American people have is there's no doubt in my mind that Biden absolutely 100% got more votes than Donald Trump in 2020. The question is, how did they harvest those votes? That's what people question. Was the process fair? And people say, I go through more of a third degree when I show up to vote than my neighbor who voted by mail.
You know?
That's the concern people have. The threshold doesn't exist that they feel that there is integrity in the process of absentee ballot.
When folks say, how does Joe Biden get 81 million votes? I get it, right? But let me tell you how. They used the pandemic to change the rules of voting in all these different states. So you had places like California and Nevada where they took and sent ballots, actual ballots, not applications, out to every single person on the voter rolls. And we know that the voter rolls are notoriously inaccurate, right? You heard many reports of California postal workers going to where they were apartment buildings and things like that, where there'd be a stack of ballots sitting there because those people may not even live there any longer, okay? Though that's how a lot of these numbers, you know, came to be. But in Pennsylvania, where you have to submit an application in order to get a ballot, where you have to submit your driver's license number or the last four digits of your social security number to identify your personal identifying information, to be able to identify yourself as a person requesting it,
right,
to them sending it to your home, okay? And then you submitting it. You know, while not a perfect system,
sure,
if I were king for the day, we'd just have voting on election day. We'd make it a holiday. But it is what we have. But it's not as bad or what folks think it is and what you see in some of these other states.
And I'll volley back on your concern over federalizing elections. We're not going to get a bad bill. I can tell you that most judicial scholars say that if you'd go to the line, you'd go the route of trying to federalize an election, it would almost be equal to a change in the Constitution. So you would literally have to almost do it by referendum of the states. You'd have to have complete, there would have to be almost a unanimous by acclamation agreement. So you wouldn't be able to, the Democrats wouldn't be able to put a Homer in there, and neither would we. I mean, we'd have to have an exhaustive process in which neither side is favored. But I still think, whether you know it or not, I really think we're teetering to the confidence level of federal elections, and that is literally everything else rests on that. If people don't trust the vote, Sam, you don't have a democracy. And this is not three elections for commissioner or county executive or state senate. These are now three elections for the presidency of the United States, the most powerful position in the free world.
Yeah.
And if we have anything like 2020. In 2016, repeated this year, there's going to be a hue and cry among the American people to figure it out. It's almost the equivalent of 9/11, we created Homeland Security. Like, we have to make a move as a government to say, we know the issue and we're going to address it. It might be something short of federalizing the election, but we have to, as a country, come together to give people confidence again. Because I can tell you, even people in my family that aren't very political are starting to really wonder if there's a real fairness in the American electoral system.
Well, I can tell you federalizing the election isn't the answer, because you're talking about confidence and trust. How much confidence and trust do people have in the FBI currently, okay? How much confidence and trust do people currently have in the DOJ currently, right? You just had Congress taking vote on Wednesday to hold Merrick Garland in contempt. And on Thursday, he puts out a memo saying that rejecting, you know, that,
right,
holding him in contempt and saying the Department of Justice isn't going to take and enforce it. Okay. So, you know, there's a great deal of trust lacking from folks in our federal government. And this is something that's occurred more in recent years. But the government has no one to blame but themselves, because it's them that have demonstrated this two-tiered system of justice. You know, you have folks here, and we've seen recently, holding these violent protests on college campuses. You just saw last weekend, you know, the protesters, you know, for the for Hamas and Palestinians, pro-Hamas protesters, you know, surrounding the White House, okay, vandalizing, you know, Lafayette Park, all these different things, throwing things, assaulting the police officer there, okay? Not a single arrest. And you have grandmas who just happened to walk into the Capitol on January 6th, okay, that are serving time in prison. You have a grandma that was just sentenced to 2 years, 75 years old, was just sentenced to prison, 2 years in prison for praying outside an abortion facility, okay? I mean, listen, I believe that what happened on January 6th, go back just a quick second here, so folks, don't think I'm trying to explain that away or overlook it at all. I'm not, okay? I think it was a dark period. I think it was a riot that got out of control. I think it besmirched our record. But I also think that everybody needs to be held accountable. The way we're holding the folks on January 6th accountable is the same way we should be holding the people who participated and committed violence in the George Floyd protests that across this country in 2020 accountable. The same way anybody that participates in violence in these Palestinian protests should be held accountable. Again, I'm a big believer in consistency. And when folks say no one is above the law, you know, I believe that we need to act that way. And I just see it not being applied equally. And that's a concern.
Well, I think you're adding to my argument now, because I think you're right. I can't really come up with an argument against the fact that people are losing faith in the judicial system, especially the federal judicial system. But then if you add that on, they're losing faith on how elections are run. They're losing faith in the federal government overall. And that is a cancer that if you don't nip it in the bud and get the right treatment, can kill you, can kill a democracy.
Well, that's not the judicial system. The judicial system, I'm talking about the executive system. It's the executive that controls the Department of Justice.
The executive weaponizing the Department of Justice.
Right. And then you also have,
sure,
you have Joe Biden has taken and tried to take and use taxpayer dollars to ask various government departments, anybody that faces with the American people, to try to register folks to vote and things of that nature. Okay, he's taken and trying to use taxpayer dollars to buy votes by claiming to forgive or cancel student debt, which is nothing more than throwing that on the backs of people who didn't go to college.
Speaking of President Biden, as you said earlier, as you led up to the show about the recent conviction on the gun charge for Hunter Biden, that it came back, I think, what, it was three counts that he was ultimately all three counts he was convicted on. But, you know, and I'm trying to, in politics, one thing I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV or on the radio, but I'm surrounded by a lot of judges and a lot of lawyers that I've become friends with, luckily, the last 44 years in this business. And I've had a conversation with at least five of them almost since the verdict, and just said, I don't form an opinion. I just said, have you read it? And the ones that have read it and understand it, they're all consistently telling me the same thing. They say, you probably already know this, Keith, but the most important thing, he said, there was clear, the evidence was presented. He lost the case on the facts. There's no doubt about it. He said, but the most important piece is the laptop. He said, just so you know, he said, the fact that they found a way to add that officially into the record and as part of the evidence and as part of the reason for his conviction opens everything else on that laptop.
Yes,
he said, exactly. He said that's the problem that this administration is going to face, this sitting president is going to face. He denied that during the debates in 2020 and others. And that's where the information is on dealings with the foreign governments, the exchange of money to Hunter Biden for family influence. All that exists in this laptop that they have denied existed, and now it is
claimed it was Russian information.
He said, and it's so funny. I won't say five for five. I talked to six. Five of the six mentioned the laptop. They said the biggest concern coming out of that shouldn't be the convictions. He says, because they'll probably get probation or something. He said the problem is that laptop exists, and that could be a real problem for this administration.
Right. And you had the FBI admit that that was untampered, right?
The FBI.
It was unplayed with. Yes, exactly. So, no, there's a lot of things that are occurring here. And again, for the average listener, the folks out there, if you're listening to our show, it's because you do pay attention. But so many people are busy just trying to make a living.
Right.
You know, they're trying to keep a roof over their family's head, food on the table. They're trying to make sure that they take care of their kids and get them to school and things of that nature, or they're tied up with their athletic events. So they're not paying attention to all these things that we are. And it boggles the mind. I mean, there's just so many things that are happening that, to me, demand change in November, okay? But for most average people, they're not going to be aware of even a tenth of what the folks who follow this are.
And I urge the American people, I urge your listeners to look beyond their comfort zone of whatever you apply to or you're a member of and you read the certain news every day, but search out the truth, search out information. Take that pie of your life that your kids and your job and taking care of the bills and your yard and the sports and all this other stuff. If it's 5% of your time, make it 10% of your time. Carve out a little more time in the next few months, because in my estimation, I've been on this planet 60 years. I've been in politics 44 of them. This is the most important and consequential election of my lifetime in the last 60 years. And I know you're busy, but if the average American could just seek the truth, look at a variety of opinions and then come to a decision. But you don't start preparing for this a day or two before absentee ballots or a day or two before the election. It will be worth your time, because we're at a critical crossroads. And if you love America, you know, carve out a little more time to get educated on what the right decision is this November.
Well, and you know, echoing that, it is so critical. And folks, this isn't just about electing former President Trump to put a stop to all the things that's taking place in the Biden administration, but it's also to make sure we elect senators like Dave McCormick to the United States Senate. Because if Joe Biden were to win, if the Democrats were to have power in both the Senate, the House, and the White House, mm-hmm. there is no doubt, ladies and gentlemen, that they would take and make Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia states and put four new Democrat senators in place, thereby enshrining a Democrat majority forever. They would take and pack the Supreme Court, okay? They'd add four or five more, because they can't abide by decisions that aren't coming down their way. And it's not like they care about the law or care about the Constitution. You can see that right now as they try to attack conservatives on the Supreme Court, whether it be Samuel Alito or Clarence Thomas, by trying to use things that their wives may have said or done against them. Folks, when you have a United States Senate and Democrats in a United States Senate who are fine with having a Democrat Senate colleague who was caught with gold bars in his suits and $450,000 in cash hidden in his closets at his home, okay? And this is the second time this guy's being tried on corruption charges. Please don't come to me and talk about the need for ethics in another branch of government when you can't even clean up your own house.
Amen, Sam. Amen.
Well, Keith, we got 4 minutes left here.
Oh, geez.
4 minutes.
Holy cow.
4 minutes. We've gone back and forth. We've disagreed. But hey, let's play Candidate Casino here or whatever.
Uh-oh.
You know, I mean,
what's that mean?
Let's make some prognostications, okay? We talked about the potential for Democrats to place somebody else on the ballot other than Joe Biden. You know, what would you put the chances are that he is not the nominee?
I still think it's 50-50. I really believe it's that high. I think it's 50-50 because, again, this is only June the 14th or whatever it is today or Saturday. But we still have a couple months before their convention. And in my estimation, it's not going to get better for Biden and Harris.
Nope.
It's going to get worse in these weeks. And you have to understand, you can pivot that quickly. You can literally – You can literally make this decision the last day of the last of their convention in August. There doesn't take a lot of preparation. You can pivot that quickly because most people think, oh, it's too late. It's not too late, folks. And I'm telling you, what I'm worried about is, again, his performance in the debate coming up, I think, is going to be poor. That's going to add to the fervor over this.
Yep.
His continuing, when you the more and more he travels, you see this, the shuffling of the feet. You see this, the starry-eyed. You see him stop talking mid-sentence. It's starting to become not only, you know, the joke of the day, but literally every public appearance has either a horrific fact check.
Yes.
Or says or does something inappropriate, leaves the stage right the wrong side, looks confused. And it's just, I'm telling you, because of the nature of reporting, we're going to just see a lot more of them because we're getting closer than ever an election. So the coverage is going to be exemplified in the next 2 months, which will add even more of a fever pitch to, we got to get rid of this guy.
Right.
I'm telling you, if it's 50-50 now, if it's a week away from the August convention, I'm going to say it might be 60-40 or 70-30. I think it's actually going to start tipping in the other direction.
Well, I'll go with I'll take the easy way out here, and I'll say 50-50 as well. But I will say, look, every time he does a public speech or speaking engagement or announces something, the White House has to come up and clean it out.
Yeah.
Clean it up. They 100%. Take and they are actually changing and altering the transcripts on these things. So they're putting out things that didn't occur or he didn't say. Okay. Merrick Garland was held in contempt because they are deathly afraid, you know, to release the audio tapes of Biden's interview with special counsel Herr, okay, in which Herr decided he couldn't prosecute him because folks would just see a feeble old man, okay? I mean, folks, you know, things are bad, but again, you know, I don't want anybody to listen to our first segment and thought we're off our rocker. There's a reason why we're thinking of this. So, hey, Keith, thank you so much.
Always great being
for
with
joining
you
us on the show today.
Thanks for your friendship. I always enjoy our time together.
And it always goes too fast. I really appreciate it. Daryl and John, thank you guys for being here as well. And folks, until next week. As always, the time flies when we're having fun here. Look forward to talking to you next week, coming into you in your living rooms or in your cars at the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Have a great weekend.